But one of the things that we've seen, though, when I came to, you know, sold more in a private sector, was insight-led selling, which tie back to this centricity idea of that, you know, helping to counter that behavior. And once we started to ask effective questions, and like what you did, going down that almost like that 5-why road with them, they usually come back and say, well, yeah, I guess the reason why we're doing this is to get the best deal.
Welcome to Aligned, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode of Aligned, Sean is joined again by the founder of The Sales Evangelist, Donald Kelly, for a two-part episode further diving into the foundations of centricity. In this first episode, the pair discusses the nuances of RFPs and how sellers can express value in the solutions they bring to the table. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Good day, y'all. It's Sean Doyle, the host of Aligned, the podcast for executives who are trying to improve their sales and marketing performance. We love focusing on that B2B, middle market, emerging businesses that have lots of change, lots of growth going on, and kind of with that comes lots of confusion. So today, a common friend, partner in this podcasting effort is Donald C. Kelly, the sales evangelist. You may know him as that. He's got a wonderful podcast himself, and he is gracious enough to join us today. And in this series, I think we got to start with a story. So, Donald, I'm going to tell you a story. It's a sales story. You're going to like this.
Yeah.
So, I got a call from a CEO of a business, cool business, really exciting. The guy was launching a new motorcycle manufacturing company. And I mean, that's kind of cool. I don't get a chance to do that kind of stuff often. Then he said the dreaded sentence, "We would like to invite you to the RFP process."
Oh, my goodness.
So, I asked the logical question, hey, what? How many people are going to be in this process? I'm thinking 2, 3, 9.
Oh my
goodness.
9
agencies. I'm like, well, tell me about the process that you're going to go through to make this decision. Well, we're going to get the RFPs back. And then we're going to, you know, invite the beauty pageant, the final 3. I'm like, oh my gosh, here we go. This is bad buyer's behavior. But you know, it's not, he was a good guy, still is a good guy. But he just, buyers exhibit bad behavior. So today's conversation is all about countering. And as you know, in the centricity model, there are 9 best practices that can be used at different times. Countering is one of the 9 best practices in today's focus. And that is a practice that is best and only used at the end of the sales cycle. Maybe a little bit in the middle of the funnel, but mostly at the end of the sales cycle. So countering, what did I do? I had just learned this. So when I heard about these RFPs, I said, well, Donald, we're going to pretend Donald's the CEO here. Donald, I've got this idea. What if we do this? It'll cost my company about $15,000 to fill out the RFP. I've looked at it. There's some great questions in here, some really interesting problems to solve. But before I spend $15,000 of time and effort, what if I just offer this to you? Do you hear the counter there? Like a new behavior. What if you and the other decision makers, I would have said that more eloquently because he's the CEO, he is the decision maker. And I said, what if you and the other people involved in this decision, what if you come to the office and go through our onboarding process? I didn't call it that either. But that's what it was. I said, what if you just come over and we'll do a little diagnostic work, we'll white wall, we'll build some hypotheses, and we'll frame for you what we think we might do. And the worst case scenario in this is you end up with a couple hours of professional help. I don't have to fill out an RFP. And honestly, every RFP I've ever seen has 1 or 2 stupid questions in it. You know, just like, what are you going to do? Why do you need my last 3 years' financials to understand? I mean, that just tells me you don't trust me. Okay. I'm a 30-year-old company. My financials are okay, right? So what if we do that, Donald? And Donald said, I think that's okay, but I'm going to go ahead and send out the RFP. It's like, oh, no, I didn't change the behavior yet. So I said, well, I'll only do that if you don't send out the RFP to 9 groups. And when we're done, if it's not a fit, if we know we can't help you, you know we can't help us, you'll have some great information to add to your RFP because you'll have some specific insights that we will have identified. And if we do discover there's a fit, then you don't have to waste all that time of yours, because I'm just telling you, going through 9 RFPs and interviews and dog and pony shows, and that's a lot of executive time, board time, marketing time, sales time. And they said yes.
Oh, so my.
Great, right? And I ended up winning the client, long story short. But it was only because I had the knowledge from the centricity model to say, that's a bad buyer's behavior. I need to offer an alternative behavior. And I just kind of did it on the fly. And it worked. It was not something that I'd planned ahead, unfortunately. So my challenge today, listeners, to you is, don't be like me and invent it on the fly. Understand there's a best practice and build some models, build some plans. This is where marketing and sales can come together to help you get more revenue. So Donald, have you ever experienced that whole buyer's bad behavior? And what are some of the bad behaviors you see?
Yeah, I mean, that RFP one is something that we saw a lot when we sold to city, county governments in K-12. It's like they eat, breathe, and sleep that. And in their world, they feel like it's doing proper due diligence. And one of the strategies that our company knew that they were going to do that. So it was just like a common thing with the government clients. So they said, all right, if they're going to do that, we're going to create our own template that they can utilize. And that was a way to counter doing that. And then when I went into the private sector and sold more to, and we've had situation, one of them was a school district, similar situation to this. We met with the buyer. So he was the purchasing director, and you know, they love that RFP lingo. And we were able to build a relationship, which was able to help us to recognize, you know, how can we get around the policies when it comes to that RFP? Like, you know, why are you doing the RFP in the first place? And it's like, yeah, we want to get the best value. So then what we did was we said, okay, what if we were to piggyback? So one of the practice that we did was, can we piggyback then off of a previous deal that we've done? And that was able to help us. So let's say I work in that county before, or with another school district similar size, we can say, hey, we can piggyback off of that one. And then now we don't have to do it. So it counters that notion of going around it. But that's what, you know, in the government space, they have that. But one of the things that we've seen, though, when I came to the, you know, I sold more in a private sector, was insight-led selling, which tied back to the centricity idea of that, you know, helping to counter that behavior. And once we started to ask effective questions, and like what you did, going down that almost like that 5-why road with them, they usually come back and say, well, yeah, I guess the reason why we're doing this is to get the best deal. So if I can still give them a best deal, a best value for it, then you don't have to go through this process, or giving them an alternative to that in the first place. And where we've done like pilot programs, kind of like what you did there, I would call that a mini pilot. You know, they come in, they evaluate first off, but it's allowed them to mitigate their risk in that process and to get that evaluation for us. And I remember we've done that with, again, in the software arena quite a lot, where we got into one department and went underneath the threshold of what we needed to spend. So instead of spending, you know, if they went with 5 different departments, they need to get an RFP. So we'll propose the idea. What if you came with just one department? Because we know once we get the main software installed, all the other departments will get jealous and will just need to buy a license. And so it helped us to land and expand and got around some of those things anyway. So
land and expand. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, I think one thing that's really critical that you just said is we often in sales and marketing see procurement and the process of RFPs as bad behavior, which is correct, but it's got a good intent, and that is looking for that best deal. I think often what helps, and this could be the kind of material that a marketing team could equip sales with. So when they get an RFP, you could listen to this content, you could read this content, and the content can all be about why RFPs don't get the best results for the client.
Yeah.
Now, I'm in professional services, so when we see RFPs, it's ridiculous. And my first response is always to say, hey, listen, would you hire your lawyer based on the lowest bid? Would you hire your accountant based on the highest bid. So, and that's an obvious illustration, but you know, it's if I am required, and right now I've got a situation and I'm going to have to go meet with the CEO pretty soon because the finance department is best intent. They're trying to get the best for their company. They require me as a third party vendor whenever I subcontract to get three bids. Well, what's happened is in the process of getting those three bids, the best contractor to help me help my client has come to me and said, I'm not going to give you any more estimates because we're never going to be the low-cost provider. But Donald, they're the best provider. They will provide the best value. But because I've got to present three bids, now finance at this my client company is telling me how to run my business and how to choose my vendors. And this is a relationship that I'm bringing to the table. This is a relationship because they love my client. This vendor in particular is donating thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars of services. Sheesh. And now I've been put in the spot of having to say, all right, it's low bid now. And they're saying, I'm out. I'm insulted, actually, because I've been doing great work for these people. And I can't believe they're asking me to be the low bid provider now. So it's just, and the conversation with the CEO is simply going to be, hey, we want to do the best for you. We've got integrity. We've worked with you for over a decade. And this is the right thing to do. Let's talk about the unintended consequence.
The Fitzmartin approach to research is simple. Start with data. We use statistical analysis and data visualization to clarify the haze around customer sentiment, behavior, and lifetime value metrics. Our most recent study helped a financial institution understand a group of new customers, identify their ideal customers, and craft a plan to acquire more of those ideal customers. Visit fitzmartin.com/solutions. Again, that's fitzmartin.com/solutions to download a free sales barrier analysis worksheet to find the gaps and barriers in your organization and read for yourself about the values a partnership with Fitzmartin can deliver to you.
So what is countering? Let's define it based on the behavioral science we're using. And everybody knows it's the trans-theoretical theorem of behavioral change. It's a brilliant science model. We've taken it, applied it to the sales and marketing process and trying to make it practical and helpful for businesses to get those gooses in revenue and goals and objectives. So this countering thing, it's simply a technical term for substituting with a healthy and proper path the improper, unhealthy path that a buyer is going down. So let's illustrate that really quickly using just something common that's not even business. So if I'm trying to quit smoking, a counter for me when I want a cigarette would be to put a lollipop in my mouth and enjoy a lollipop. A counter, if I read a story the other day, we were laughing at it because I like a little 90s hip hop, but not all the rap stuff. But anyway, Eminem, the rapper, was known for a drug problem. And he was trying to get out of that drug problem. And his solution was running. So every time he had an urge to do drugs, he was running like 5 marathons a week. It was crazy. This story is like, but it was just a good illustration of alternative behaviors. So it's really not, it's important to hear. It's suggesting, because the buyer's in control, it's suggesting a different behavior. In terms of the behavior that they are suggesting, or interestingly enough, behavior that they're in is the thing that's causing them the very problem that's giving them the reason to talk to you about fixing that problem. But it's normal to understand. You got to understand, like it's normal for me to have this habit and to say, I need to fix this habit, but it's still a habit, right? It takes weeks, months. I read something recently. It says it takes over 60 days to break a habit. So why would we expect our buyers to exhibit new behavior while they're still in the process of considering and changing and thinking? So we've just got to understand what that idea is, countering. It's not overcoming objectives. It's changing and offering alternatives to bad behavior. So let's turn the corner and I think this could be a lot of fun. What are, Donald, some of the bad behaviors you as an expert salesperson have seen consistently? And let's figure out how to solve those.
Yeah. I mean, so some of the ones that you might hear is like, you know, like we need to, so the easiest one is what you shared already, the RFP may not necessarily be the best thing for the clients. The other thing that we get is, you know, they want to push off a project because we want to think about it. And it's not necessarily that they're trying to, and it's not saying that you're, again, all of these things, they're rooted in like good intention. Yeah, we want to think and want to evaluate. But usually what that comes back down to is like nothing happens. And then, you know, 4 or 6 months later, they find themselves in that same rut again. And they're trying to pick up that process. So the indecision. Yep.
Let me dive in on that one. Let's do that. Centricity is incredible because it points to that exact problem. I want to think about it. We've all heard that. What's that tell you? So as a salesperson, that tells me I'm not going to get my commission this quarter, which is why I don't like it, right? But what that tells me is it informs me as to where the buyer is. So one of the most common mistakes is a lack of trust. So a great way to overcome a lack of trust as a buyer is to say, let me think about it. I'll get back with you. It's really not true. It's one of those little white lies that we all tell in life. You know, I'm not a liar.
Yeah.
And I tell Donald, the salesman, I'm just going to think about this, Donald. Okay, it's a lie. I'm really not thinking about this. I'm just not ready. So often sales and marketing, because we are so focused on this end objective, we present solutions too quickly. We don't listen enough. We don't hear enough. So the buyer isn't thinking about what we're saying. They're thinking like, you couldn't possibly know what it is that we need yet.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, as soon as I don't listen, if I don't understand, if I don't present a little contract, I'm going to call it a contract and these trust builders, I love calling them trust builders because that's what it is. So if I've not listened and demonstrated that I've listened before I present a solution, then I'm going to break the trust and a result's going to be to get a, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
So what's a trust builder? A little mini contract is what I'd call it. So Donald, if I'm listening to you, you've got this problem in sales. We've heard it. We've gone back. So I'm going to go back and as a salesperson, and marketing can maybe help you on this, but I think this is a really simple email is the way to go and say, Donald, I want to make sure I understand this is the bad behavior. Okay. We're going to, in business, right? We're going to call it different than bad behavior. This is the problem you're facing, blah, 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 blah. And that's looking back, right? And then looking forward, here's what we want to see. Here's what we want to see as the new behavior, the desired state. And, you know, we want to hit this goal, hit this number, change this behavior, change that, you know, less clients leaving us. We want more net new. We want more current client development, whatever that current, that thing, the problem is. So here's the current state. Here's the future state. And then, and you want to consider this as a solution to that future state. Did I get that right? You know, so that's a little mini contract. And it tells you, Donald, that I listened. I've listened to the problem. I understand the future state that you care about. And I'm restating that you want to pursue fixing this thing. It's not a contract. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you to sign it, but I'm going to ask you, like, did I get this right? Would you reply to me? You know, and what would you reply if you were the buyer?
Yeah, I mean, of course, at that point, I'd be like, okay, yeah, you clearly outlined that. You gave me, you showed what we wanted. And now it puts me in a position as a buyer to say, I am now intrigued because I really want to see how this is going to work and how you're going to help me get to that future state. So let's go continue the conversation.
But let me ask you, what's not in that email? Did I say, hey, Donald, I've got this service and this product? No, I didn't.
No.
Right.
And that's the crazy part. I think that's where salespeople get mixed up sometimes. I've been on this rant the past little bit, and it's an old soapbox, but it's relevant. The whole features and benefit aspect. It is so easy to go back to feature and benefit. It is a default. If I'm selling a phone, I'm going to sell, you know, yeah, it has a lot of memory. It feels good. It has the latest updates and blah, blah, blah. It fits in your hand. Like that's what I can physically see. But I'm not buying a phone for any of those purposes. I'm spending $1,000 because I want to make sure that I can speak to clients anywhere in the world and to be able to have reliable internet and jump on my Zoom meeting.
Not buying the phone. I'm not buying the phone. Right.
No.
And you could get into highly considered decisions. Sometimes there is a prestige as the why did I buy IBM? Mm-hmm. It really had nothing to do with the product. It had to do with the prestige of buying IBM. It had to do with the safety of buying IBM. But yeah, it's not that F&B feature benefit selling. No way. And I think the really interesting thing about trust voters is, and this kind of email contract back is, you know, when you determine, when you do this email after, this is a probably middle of the funnel email conversation, maybe late, where you're restating these issues, you're restating this desired change and the renewed commitment. That is something that you can go back to every time. So in 2-3 weeks, I'm still talking to you, Donald, as the buyer, and you say, you know, I want to think about it. And, you know, it gives me something to go back to and say, okay, so in essence, you stated 3 weeks ago that you wanted to change and that you had a commitment to this change in this future state. So I hear you say you want to think about it. Great. You're in charge. Tell me what changed. Give me more information about that. Maybe it's a good reason. Maybe Donald is on the edge of getting fired. And the more you lean into selling to him, the worse you're going to be. Maybe Donald's budget changed. Maybe the business has another, maybe they shifted strategy at the annual board meeting. There may not, but you've got to ask. And that gives you a benchmark and it eliminates the dreaded, what's the worst sales email in the world, right? Hey, Donald, just checking in.
I hate that. Please.
I don't care. Why are you checking in? Because that's about me, right? I'm really saying, hey, Donald, are you going to buy my thing? It's much better to have that contract in hand, that trust builder, show that you listen so that you can move forward into the conversations about solving the problem. And then it gives you this stake, this North Star to go back and say, hey, I still want to make sure we're on this path, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 So that's a great one. So I'll think about it. What else do you see? What other bad behaviors do you see?
Yeah. You know, there's that one. There's the send, well, on early stage, top of the funnel is when you're reaching out to a prospect, send more information to me. and that's really, you know, again, that's more like an objection you're getting into, but it is a lie that they tell themselves as well. And you, I mean, there's different ways you can counter that, but that's one that you can see on the top of the funnel side, not later in the process per se.
Well, that's interesting because I think I would argue that countering, and the science shows that countering is not effective early stage. Mm-hmm. So I think there would be other tools that I would use on a send more information.
Yeah.
And what I would use there would be something called social liberation or rational evaluation or emotional excitement, get people excited about the idea. Instead of the more information, I wouldn't send a spec sheet necessarily.
No.
I would send, although that would fit into rational, I would send something that would get them excited and understanding the future state. So late stage people are looking toward a future state. They're actively engaged in making this change. So I think the whole send me more information thing comes down to maybe withholding of information or some kind of, it's a cue that's saying, okay, Oliver, you got to fix this. All right. Slow down, Donald. Slow down. This is just too much. And there's too much information. We've got to take a break. We're going to have to finish this thought about countering and how sales and marketing can come together to close more deals in another episode. I know you're going to say yes. You going to join me again? And everybody listening knows that we're going to keep recording. So why are we? Why do we do this? I guess it's just part of the show. So thank you for joining us for this first episode on countering and how that best practice of one of the 9 in Centricity, the approach to marketing and sales to improve your closed deals. We're focusing particularly on those late stage deals where you can make a lot of money by improving those models, those practices, and this is one of the most effective. So thank you, Donald. We will be back in just a minute.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.